Greetings and welcome to the Reasoning with an Optimist podcast for the week of March 27th, 2016. This is Jack Brissett Mills. We have a conversation today with Mary. But first, the verses from the Calendar of the Soul that Rudolf Steiner wrote. But I wrote these verses after his verses for his week 52. I wrote this one 2 years ago. Verse 52. The being of unspeakable beauty, raying out from the natural world, entwines with the forces of the cosmos, streaming strength and life, uniting the spirit of the world and my own highest self within my being. And this verse I wrote last year for the same Rudolf Steiner verse, 52a. Strength flows from these rays, this light, full of life, which reaches into my depths, making the earthly part of me entwine upward to the heavenly and spin together in dance. Yeah, Mary, we never met yet, except through this conversation. A friend of a friend, maybe even friend of a friend of a friend. But very happy to talk with her. Thank you, Mary. That was very nice of you. Here you go. Enjoy.
I write poetry, too, and so it's fun to figure out ways to get your poetry out there.
I just read an Adbusters magazine, which is an interesting magazine. It doesn't have any ads in it. And it's mostly poetry and good writing and some great poetry.
Really?
Great poetry, yeah.
And anyone can submit to it?
I think so, yes. As long as you don't mind not being paid.
Well, but I would like to get paid at some point.
I saw a cute phrase that said, artist dies of exposure. Exposure is the nice word for what artists get, but when they don't get paid.
Yeah, totally. I can't. Yeah, it's not a way to make a living for sure.
It sounded kind of like you had an idea for a topic or a subject.
I do. I'm really passionate about environmental issues.
Great.
So I wanted to talk about that.
Environmental issues. That's everything, right? Everything is an environmental issue, really. I mean,
everything is an environmental issue, exactly, yeah.
Even domestic violence. I have some friends who are on domestic violence hotlines, and that's an environmental issue too, but it's a different kind of environment, I think, than what you're talking about.
No, but it is connected in that people predict that as environmental issues worsen in terms of, like, water shortage and heat waves, and violence, Domestic violence tends to spike when it's hot, women are supposed to provide, you know, all the things in homes traditionally, and in a lot of cultures around the country, I mean around the world, and so if they're unable to provide those things, food, water, then the violence against them will increase.
Yes.
So, yeah, for sure.
I mean, scientists have long made experiments with animals in confined areas, and they mistreat each other when they're right next to each other, grasshoppers or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's so obvious.
Yeah. Unnatural circumstances make us behave in unnatural ways, I guess. Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of helplessness with environmental issues. Someone like me, I take care. I'd buy the best engine I can buy. I buy products that can decompose, but what can I do for anything else except my little teeny footprint? It has to be millions of people's little teeny footprint. So how do you reach millions of people? How do you change anything actually?
I know. I think about that all the time. Because I do everything that I can, and I try to influence those in my sphere to do what they can. But it does seem like if a thousand or millions of tiny footprints have created it, then the logic follows that millions of footprints can amend it, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
Just how do you get people on board when so much of what we do seems to be on autopilot?
Yep.
anymore.
Yeah.
And we exist in these structures that seem to go against what I would say are my values.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I don't know how to turn it. I don't think we can buy our way to a more sustainable world. I don't know how to change people's paradigm. I guess that's the thing I think about a lot. How do you change people's thinking?
And it does seem that law is made after public opinion is brought. You know, there are laws you could make that say you can't sell a product that you don't know what is happening to every part in it.
Right, yeah.
You know, when you buy a computer, you make an agreement with the company that when it's dead, you have a return policy and they will take it apart and put all the parts back in a useful place. That kind of thing can be a law,
mm-hmm.
but unless the public already feels that way, no one's going to let the law go through. It's going to be an undue burden on commerce or something like that, some silly thing like that.
Right, exactly. Unless we become aware as citizens that this is an important thing. Yeah. Well, and I think that's one thing that I try to think about is I'm a citizen, I'm not a consumer, and to try to rail against that identity.
Good.
Because that, I think if we think of ourselves as citizens, then we're not going to just think about my interaction with whatever it is I'm buying. I'm thinking about, like you said, the whole line of where did it come from, what's going to happen to it when I'm done with it.
Yeah.
We have to start thinking in those ways. I don't know.
I'm always thinking of this adversarial side of the world. There's a large number of, I guess in every country there's a large number. In our country we see them actively trying to wreck the environment. They actually are trying, like the big belching truck, and in the rear window of the truck it says Prius destroyer or something like that. They're actively laughing at environmentalism and doing their part to show you that they don't care. And so there's a large number of people that are actively opposed to fixing the world. Maybe it's got some religious element. You know, I live in Texas, and we have a lot of crazy people here, and a lot of them really don't like it that we're trying to stop the end of the world. They think this is the way it's supposed to be. Everything is going to end, and all this sin and hell down here will end, and we'll all go to heaven, all the good people.
Oh, I know.
And so I think that they're mad at tree huggers, and they're mad at granola and hippies and any kind of label they can put on it. They just don't like that. They want to end the place as fast as possible.
I know. Which is really sad to me, with this enormous disconnect. And it feels like a real twisting of whatever, I don't know, whatever faith tradition you come from, right? That just seems like a real...
Yeah.
First of all, it's tremendous hubris to think that, you know, we can live independently. I mean, we can't destroy the womb that sustains us. And I don't know where we became disconnected from that realization. What a sad place to be. How much suffering is a person going through where they want to deliberately cause the suffering,
right.
You know, externally? Right? Yeah. That makes me really sad.
That's where sympathy can come in on our side, and we see these are depressed people. These are really on the edge people.
Yeah, there's a lot of fear there.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, of course, the fear is hidden through violence.
Mm-hmm.
This open carry idea that you can't even go to the coffee shop without a gun because you never know. And just somehow making fear into something, into a strength in a way that... It's actually much stronger to go weaponless into the world. That's the true strength.
That's true courage.
Yeah.
Yeah. To be open and vulnerable and aware is way, I know there's a tremendous amount of fear. And I also feel it's a little misplaced. I don't think we're afraid of the right things.
Good.
I mean, I think, why are we not afraid of what we're doing to the planet? Why are we not afraid of what we're doing to other humans?
Yeah.
Why are we not afraid of all these technologies that we are completely dependent on but have no idea how they actually work?
Yeah.
You know, or why are we not afraid that we don't understand how to eat in a seasonal way? I don't know. I mean, there's all these things that we, and all these products that we use. Why are we not afraid of their synergistic impact on us? Why? I don't know. We're conditioned to fear things, but I think that's just a red herring. That's not really at the heart of anything.
I mean, if you're really asking the question, you have to say someone's profiting from fear. And so someone actually, someone is intentionally causing the fear in order to get... There's a fellow called Alex Jones, who's the most insane person who's popular on the radio. And he's the one that right away said Obama killed Justice Scalia. And he's But if you ever listen to him, he actually came from Austin. Maybe he's still here. When you listen to him, he's selling gold. On every commercial break, he's selling gold. Gold is what people buy when there's chaos and when there's revolt and revolution. Gold prices skyrocket because it's something, it's something you can count on in a revolution. It'll still be worth something after the revolution. So, of course, Alex Jones is causing us to be on an imminent path to revolution because then he makes money selling gold. I'm trying to answer your question, why? Someone's making money off of the fear of the public.
Yeah, that's so true. To what end, though? I mean, to what end?
A short-term end, yeah. Someone's profit.
Yeah, someone's... But we don't think about long-term, though. So I guess, profit is king. Yeah, that's the god we worship, isn't it?
You know, years ago, I was struggling with these questions, and every one of them, the answer is education, right? The answer to every one of our environmental issues and domestic violence issues and et cetera, the answer is education. And of course, if you look at our education system, how can you change that? How can you help that? It's so huge. It's so big. I answered it personally by meeting someone who was a Waldorf teacher and realizing, wow, I could be a Waldorf teacher because they don't do this and they don't do that. And so there are places where people are educated in a more well-rounded way. And so there is a leaven, a leaven in society of a small number of people who are well-educated and vast in their experience and knowledge, and they're working on great ideas, and maybe that's enough. Maybe all you need is this small number of enlightened souls to pull us out of it.
I hope so.
How can a person work with environmental issues? What do you do? I am always interested in the practical side of things. What do you do about environmental issues? Besides your own personal life, you can make your own life really beautiful and maybe the example of it throughout your decades. People will start to see you as a neighbor and as a friend, and you will affect 1,000 people. Do you do more than that? Do you lecture?
So I do a couple things. So I do try to live in a very sustainable way, and I try to be mindful. And I have three daughters that I am trying to raise in a mindful way. But I want to get back to that. So the other thing I do is I try to write a blog on environmental issues. And, you know, I kind of paused for a while because I felt like I was slipping into this really cynical despair place and sort of judgmental and just really because there was a lot of fear, and I realized that I have a lot of grieving to do around environmental issues, that I need to process this grief so that I have to relinquish myself to that so that I can come out on the other side and write with a hope that can inspire people to act rather than be turned off by bitterness. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because most people do talk just the bitterness. They don't give the solution. They give the bitterness.
Yeah. Well, I was listening to other people who have come out on the other side. Joanna Macy has done a lot of work in this, and, of course, Jane Goodall. And just they just have really processed their grief in such a way that it's become material for them to be hopeful and inspiring. And I feel like that's the place I want to write from, so kind of give that a rest. The other thing I do is I work for a nonprofit, and I do environmental education with urban high schoolers. And so, yeah, and it's great because it feels like it's an alignment of my values and the things that I find really important in my life, and I get to, and I get paid to talk about it with high schoolers. And so it's very hands-on. There's a lot of science. I'm not a sciencey person, but I try to, you know, stretch myself that way because actually, you know, one of the components of it is really hands-on experiential learning. And so I get to take my students out into the community and they get to meet people working in environmental fields. And then I also try to expose them to people who aren't environmentalists who have an environmental thread in what they do so that they can understand that you can take that with you, even if you are, you know, in a job completely seemingly unrelated to the environment. We all interact with it on some level. But the hardest part really is raising kids for me in a consumerist society and in a society that's hell-bent on enrichment activities for children that I don't think will, in the long run, have any value given the future that we're providing them. And so it feels like I wish that I could find a band of other parents who recognize the severity of our situation of our world and figure out a way that we can parent in a way that's going to equip our kids with tools for that future, if that makes sense.
It does. I don't have kids, and so I think about the difficulties of having kids a lot more maybe than you do even. How to raise a child who is not your opposite. If you have a pastor of a church, the girl will probably be wayward or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
And if you're a pothead, always smoking marijuana, you're going to have a real straight child.
Right. You know, like the Michael J. Fox character.
Yeah. There you go. I remember that. Yeah.
Alex P. Keaton. The conservative with the
Very scary. Yeah. Young Republicans are always frightening to me. So, anyway, I was a teacher of fourth graders, and there was one parent who didn't let the child have any television, which I thought was great. But that child knew every episode of The Simpsons. He knew every commercial. How did he do it? How did he do it? He never had a television, but he was so attracted that, for example, on Halloween, every time he'd go to someone's door, he would go in and watch their television.
You know, oh, my goodness.
And so he was just sucking it up because the parent wouldn't let him have it. Just the opposite. So anyway, I would not know how to raise children to not be my opposite.
I know. So it's always that. How do I temper these values that if I was living by myself, I could go all out, but I can't. Like, I always shop at thrift stores. Well, my girls are of an age where thrift stores aren't quite cutting it,
that's right.
It's not cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Over 13.
It's not cool.
Yeah. Over 13 is really troublesome.
And so, I mean, I have to relent every once in a while and buy things that I don't know where they came from. I don't know if they're produced by slave labor. I don't know if they were, you know, manufactured sustainably, but one of those things.
I mean, we just had a takeout recently and it came with chips and we're eating these chips and they're good, but we never buy a corn chip unless it's an organic corn chip. And here we are eating a restaurant corn chip. We know we're eating GMO corn and corn, but we do live in the world. You know, we can't totally be free of the modern world. It's going to be in us.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. And it's hard. Yeah. It's hard to be a purist and be black and white about things. Yeah. And I don't know how you maintain consciousness without going crazy either. Because at some point you do sometimes have to turn a blind eye. It's like, oh, well, I've got these chips and I don't want to waste them or throw them away. They're here.
Right. There you go.
Especially since I know that they're the way they were derived anyway. Yeah.
This idea, too, about if you have a dog and he was a stray and now he's your dog, that dog will be much healthier than the dog you bought as a purebred. Even though the purebred is so beautiful, his ancestors have not lived on the street. The stray, he knows how to live and he can eat anything. But your purebred, he gets one drink out of a puddle and he's sick. You know, that kind of thing. So with us, I think it's dangerous to be so pure that it's almost the Howard Hughes kind of syndrome where you don't shake hands anymore and you don't ever go out. And that is not healthy. You think you're doing it because it's healthy, and yet you're less healthy.
Right,
Very strange, one of my themes here in this podcast has been where truth is, wherever you find a truth, there's a paradox. And at the very center of the truth, the opposite thing is true. You know, all you need is love, or money can't buy everything, that kind of thing. If you get close enough to those paradoxes, you see the opposite is true, too. And here, what we're talking about, health, you're actually, I would think you're healthier if you can live in any country on earth, in any environment, and survive and thrive. That's the healthy person.
Right, yeah.
But the one behind the wall, the one in the clean house, they feel like they're healthier because they're eating all the good foods and they have the good air control and the good water control, and yet they can't live anywhere else. They will suffer everywhere else.
Right, yeah. That's very, very true. I see that in other ways, the way we try to inoculate ourselves from germs by using sanitizer or whatever all the time.
Yes.
Which ends up compromising our immunity, as opposed to just playing in the dirt or being barefoot or, you know, all those things.
Definitely. The dirt, especially. When I was young, I read these survival books, and one of the things that was so bizarre is that if you're out in the woods and you are ill, you need some kind of antibiotic, eat dirt. Dirt has all these amazing microbes in it. And then this recent book called The Martian, which was a Matt Damon movie.
Oh, yeah.
The dirt he had to have microbes put into it before you could grow potatoes. You can't just put potatoes into Martian dirt and add water. They wouldn't grow. You have to have billions of microbes in the soil before your potatoes will even grow. It doesn't just mean water and sunlight. You need all this underworld to have health.
That took thousands of years to develop.
Yep.
Yeah.
All these communities. And how I'll say one more example. The cheesemaker who was told by the government that you have to have stainless steel, clean rooms for your cheesemaking, she objected. Mm-hmm. She used vats of wood and wooden paddles that could never be sterilized. And she was a microbiologist, so she had the government do a test with her barrels and her wooden tools, and also a room next to hers, which was a sterilized clean room. She made her cheese, and then the two cheeses were brought to the government, and she said, okay, add the worst disease you can think of to each cheese. And they put an E. coli into both cheeses, and the sterile cheese, the E. coli, took over, and it was it was poisonous. But her cheese, the cheese killed the E. coli. Her own cheese defended her from the illness. And so you need these sophisticated communities of microbes to be healthy. Here we are talking about environmental issues. That's the most intimate environment we've got, is our belly and the ground around us and the...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and we just don't respect it, do we?
Yeah.
I mean, to our demise, yeah. That's so funny how sanitation can lead us to be more vulnerable.
Yep. Very, very strange.
It is strange. We have so many things that are backwards, it seems like.
But we are coming along. I was thinking back, too, of how we have changed. In the 1800s, the turn of the 20th century into the 1900s, if someone saw an animal that they'd never seen before, they killed it. That was just the thing. If you read any books about whaling or exploring in the woods, anytime you saw anything, you just killed it. And if that kind of animal just hung around when you shot one of its brothers, you shot all the animals, because isn't that interesting? All the animals, they didn't fly away, or they didn't run away when I shot them. You just shoot all of them. That was the normal considered approach to being an environmentalist. You were
really?
Yeah. And so that's just 100 years ago, 120 years ago, that was normal. So what... We have improved a little, you know, we have come a little ways, but whether it's fast enough to save ourselves from destruction, who knows?
Do we do that? Have we improved? I wonder.
Well, that certainly has changed. And when people go on safaris today and put their pictures up of the next to the elephant or something, they are shamed, publicly shamed. At least there's some change, some public change.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of disagree with you. I kind of think we do the same thing, but now we are not looking the animal in the eyes. We shoot it. We shoot it by the things that we consume unwittingly. You know what I mean?
There you go. We're
unaware. It's not such a direct link anymore.
Yeah.
But we still have the same sort of ignorance when it comes to other species and their place and our place. Yeah, in the food chain, I guess I would say.
I suppose it's a willful ignorance. It's illegal, I think, to film hog farms or to film chicken operations. I think it's illegal because we have the most sacred law of our land is thou shalt not inhibit commerce. If you do anything, that somehow causes someone to lose money, you are wrong. You are wrong. So you can't tell people that their beef is bad or that their chickens have been mistreated. That you're in the jail for that,
Isn't that scary?
It is scary. And yet, if you did make it public, I saw this amazing video someone took of a processing plant in China where they had invented this marvelous, it was on an engineering point of view, it was a marvelous machine. You'd have a room full of chickens, like a gymnasium full of chickens. And this, I would call it a vacuum cleaner, it went through the room without startling anybody. Any chicken, they weren't startled, but it just sucked them up and shot them out the other end, and they were killed and cut open in a half a second. And it was just going boom, 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 boom. It was just maybe 5 chickens a second, 10 chickens a second. And this is the stages we've come to, that processing is so important. And that's why we send our chickens now to China. We've just passed the law. We can send our chickens to China because they do such an efficient job of it.
Yeah.
They don't have the public watching over their shoulder as much. But this video came, the reason I brought it up is that it's there. That video's there. It went around on Facebook and people saw it, but we still buy chickens the same way we always did. We're going to look for the cheapest chicken. Again, education will be the answer to that, but how to educate about such a thing, I have no idea.
Well, and we have to not only educate our minds, but educate our hearts, you know, so that the information moves us to do something different.
Yes.
Like it's not enough just to know but with our minds, because, I mean, I think our minds are weak and are easily distracted.
Yes.
But once we know something with our heart, I keep thinking about all the palm oil situation with the deforestation and how it's heartbreaking, and yet palm oil is ubiquitous.
Yeah.
There's hardly anything I can pick up that doesn't have palm oil, that's packaged anyway, which is, again, you know, let's eat real food so we don't have to deal with that. But
Of course, I've read all the Michael Pollan books, but that palm kernel oil, the palm oil, I've been against that for 28 years. So it's been, the education has been available. It's not something we just learned.
Really? See, it's new to me, but it's been an issue for years, huh?
Yeah, I've been avoiding palm oil for so long. I was doing it more for the health effects. It's not as good an oil.
Mm.
I mean, that's probably the best education. If it hurts you, you'll listen more than if it's just bad for somebody far away, I suppose.
Oh, okay. The information has been out there about palm oil, and yet, like you said, the god of commerce.
Yeah.
We keep using it, huh?
Yeah. I wonder if we haven't, I've been kind of feeling this way, I wonder if we haven't been conditioned by the movies like Star Trek, that eventually we'll be this beautiful utopian society and we'll be traveling to other planets and everybody's a brother, no more war. Maybe we've just conditioned that everything's going to work out somehow, when in fact it's up to us to make it work out, and we're just kind of waiting. Someone's going to figure it out, someone's going to solve all our problems.
Right.
I wonder if that's a bad education, that we have all these stories of how things work out all right, and yet it's up to us to make them do so.
Right, yeah. Right, we're the hero we've been waiting for, huh?
There you are.
Yeah, I think you're right. It is, it's up to us, and there's so many of us. Surely we can tackle this.
I like to imagine purpose to the world. I wrote this book about how, since nobody can know really whether there's an afterlife, whether there's a God, nobody can really know. And so our belief system has to be the best one that helps us live the best life. It shouldn't just be everything sucks. That's not, that may be the way it is, but that doesn't make you live the best life to feel that way. And so anyway, I was positing the idea that there's a purpose, that the world is actually giving us what we ask for in a magical way, that how many people really are looking and desperately reaching for things that distract them, things that are destructive, the alcohol, the horrible movies, the domestic violence, all these things are what we choose for ourselves. If the world is actively listening and giving us what we wish, then the destruction of the environment is really just what we want. It's exactly what we're asking for, at least in the proportion of those who are actually asking for it. I mean, it's
that makes you think that there's a lot of pain and suffering.
Yes, yes. I mean, how many people can really sit quietly with themselves? I mean, meditation is still not a common thing. Oh, you meditate. That's still a weird thing, because most of us, when we sit and try to be quiet, we cannot, and it's frightening, and it's, we are driven away from ourselves and driven toward computers and TVs and alcohol and drugs so that we don't have to look at ourselves. I mean, I'm just talking about general things, but the destruction of the world is not some surprise result. It's the direct result of this kind of destructive thinking that we all seem to have, at least some part of it.
Absolutely, yeah. This need to disconnect.
Yeah.
We're disconnected from ourselves, we're disconnected from each other and from the planet. Yeah. I've been reading a lot of about Native American history, and of course their spirituality is all about connection.
Yeah.
And seeing the honoring the spirit in everything.
Yes.
And just that sort of holistic mindset. I just imagine it would be a balm to people.
Yeah.
I mean, it might be, if we can recognize and honor ourselves,
yeah,
each other in that way, my gosh. And then, of course, the planet, I think, and everything in it. Is that possible, or is that Pollyanna-ish? I don't know.
Yeah. It's easy to belittle anything that's positive. We much rather hear people talking about how horrible things are. We can all agree. We can all agree with that. Anyone talks about something, everything talks about something nice, no way, we're not going to listen to that. That's Pollyanna-ish.
Well, you know what? I'm so glad you said that, because you're right. It's so much easier to be cynical and sarcastic and to take that sort of stance, that posture.
Yeah.
That's not the posture that's going to heal the world.
Yeah.
Right? We need
to
be,
impossible.
Yeah. We have to be hopeful and vulnerable and open and understand that there are realms of existence that we have no clue on, that there's more out there than we don't know, than we do know, and that's a delightful proposition, or
I think,
it can be.
Yeah,
I think.
It is the normal. If you hear someone proclaiming doom, it's probably wrong. It's probably wrong because the motivation is there to proclaim doom. You get more interest. People are more interested in what you say if you're saying everything's wrong. There's a great audience for that. People want to hear how wrong it really is, how terrible it really is. They really want to hear that stuff. When Rush Limbaugh was becoming famous, back when Newt Gingrich was head of the Congress, I listened to him quite a bit. And I had a brother that loved him. And I hear this man, just such a depressing man and so depressed himself. But he was making people feel better. And I said, well, what kind of person would feel better hearing this horrible man? They must be so terribly sad, these people, that this guy cheers them up. And also I knew at the time that if a person wasn't proclaiming evil, impending evil, nobody would tune in the next day. They only want to hear you again if you're going to tell more about how horrible things are going to get. If you're telling them everything's wonderful, they don't have any need to listen to you ever again. And so on a commercial sense, you make no money if you are saying things are good. So anyway, if someone is proclaiming evil coming, they have all this motivation to do so, and we should be on our guard and not just eat it up. It's something in our nature just wants to think how terrible it is. But you were mentioning all these great things. I know so many young people who are really doing great things. I'm so proud of them.
Yeah.
There's so much to be hopeful for.
There is a lot to be hopeful for.
And you've got three daughters, you say.
Yes, yeah.
Wonderful.
I'm sorry?
Wonderful. You have three daughters. That's great.
I do. 13, 10, and 8.
Wonderful.
Yeah, the 8-year-old is
it. Yeah, you have to be very hopeful for their sake.
I have to be hopeful. but I also allow despair to wash over me when I feel it, because...
Yeah.
One of the ways to stay connected is to feel what you're feeling when you're feeling it, and then to let it, and just ride it like a wave, and then let it go.
Yes, yes, yes.
And that's one thing that I'm learning very late in life, that I'm grateful that I'm learning it all.
Yes.
Rather than suppressing it or distracting myself from it. When it comes up, you feel it, and then the feeling passes. It's an exercise.
Excellent.
Yeah. Right? Don't we have to do that?
Definitely.
Because if we shut ourselves from that, then we are also numbing ourselves from experiencing, you know, right, the greater joys.
Yeah, the two things. The pain, I always try to feel the pain is a messenger, perhaps. Here again, lifting it up to maybe a spiritual dimension. Thinking pain, personal pain, as a messenger of maybe my death. And it's not something I want to avoid thinking about. I want to welcome it and say, hello, you know. So... turning my pain into something positive that is meant for me in a good way, and I look at it and ask what it wishes. Can I help it, you know, anyway? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Also, the other thing is to pretend that the world is made for me, and that these horrible events are a test for me alone, that how will I respond when people hate around me and when people are destroying around me? Will I join them or will I not? Will I not? And that's my test. And this is, in a silly way, you can make it into your world that way, that I will do my best no matter what is happening around me. I will act kindly to people. I will comfort people. As the plane is plunging down, I will be the one that comforts the people near me, you know, that kind of thing. That if you raise it up into a spiritual dimension, you can actually have a much better life and affect people positively around you.
Yeah.
Because we don't know what the heck's going on here. We have to make it up for ourselves. What is going on?
Yeah. Yeah, it can be a terrific teacher. It's just revealing something to you.
Yeah.
Pain is, yeah.
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 Anyway, I'm glad you're raising kids. You seem like a great person.
Wow, thanks. Well, it was terrific talking to you. You're like a great person. Yeah.
Thank you.
This was a lot of fun.
And again, thanks, Mary. Very kind of you. And thank you all for listening. Tune in again next week if you like. I'll be here. If you have any comments or suggestions, leave them on my website, reasoningwithanoptimist.net. This is Jack Brissett Mills. Bye-bye.